The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Can heat a home and reduce power bills? Mr. Speaker, request waiver notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? I hear several no's. Motion is tabled. Barring no more notices of motion, we'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. Time is now 2:42. We'll conclude at 3:42. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. A serious concern, Mr. Speaker, for parents of children with autism is knowing that support services will be there for their child throughout its life. The document Lifespan Needs for Persons with Autism Spectrum Disorder is a 2010 report that makes 53 recommendations to do exactly that. It is also the subject of a Liberal election promise from the last campaign, and I will table that promise from their platform, Mr. Speaker. While the promise was only to review the recommendations in the report, we are now a year later, and parents who took some hope, quite frankly, from that promise, want to know what action has been taken. So I'll ask the Premier if he can update the House on when his government intends to keep the promise that it made to parents with children of autism.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Health to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There is a couple of parts to the question there. In terms of the 53 recommendations in the AMAT report, there has been a committee in place that is made up of the Departments of Health and Wellness, Department of Community Services, Department of Education, Department of Justice, and we are looking at the, and in fact continuing to work on the 53 recommendations. There's a very, very strong group that has been assembled to make sure that over the next number of years, this was in fact a landmark report recognized across the country. A number of those recommendations, especially across the life cycle, in fact, are now underway, but there are others that will take some time to fully implement.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that answer. But the problem is that the report itself, issued in 2010, was the result of the work of a pretty extensive committee exercise to come up with actual action items, Mr. Speaker, and now we have the government saying after a year that their response is to form a committee to study the work and the recommendations of a previous committee. Well, Mr. Speaker, the parents of children who have autism took some hope from the Liberal campaign promise that they'd actually see real action. So I'd like to ask the Premier if he believes forming a committee to study the work of a previous committee is actually keeping his commitment to parents who have children with autism.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Health to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased to say that While perhaps it wasn't done in the first 100 days of our government, we have an outstanding panel that's put together just for EIBI. The work of AMAT is ongoing. In fact, will probably be the work of a decade. And it's well representative of EIBI, whether it's at the Department of Health and Wellness, the IWK, clinicians across Nova Scotia, in fact, who are able to bring the needs of the entire province so that we can take a look and make sure that the next round of action is well placed.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And what we're trying to establish here for parents who have children with autism is that real action will be coming from the government. I appreciate that they have a committee of well-qualified people, but parents are looking for action, Mr. Speaker, both early intervention and action on the entire lifespan of young Nova Scotians who are going to go through life with autism. In 2011, the previous government, the NDP government, created an autism action plan that was complete with real, measurable goals and public progress updates that we could all see how they're doing. Mr. Speaker, there's been no update on the autism action plan in the year that the Liberal government has been in, despite previous updates under the old government. So, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier, will he assure the House that we will start getting progress updates on the autism action plan starting in this calendar year?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Health, Minister of Education to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. I want to suggest to all members of the House that we have not waited for a report to take action to address the needs of the students in our school system who suffer from autism at some point on the spectrum. In fact, we have an autism consultant at the department, we have an autism consultant in each board, and we have provided professional development for our teachers so that they better understand autism, so that they can look for the signs that would indicate early identification and then the early intervention. So we have not waited for the report, Mr. Speaker. We are acting.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, we all know that it can be a real challenge for young families with young children to acquire affordable childcare in Nova Scotia. Unaffordable childcare can make life very difficult for a growing family. The average cost of childcare is high enough to consume a significant proportion of many young families' household incomes. So my question to the Premier is this, Mr. Speaker. Would the Premier please tell us what is the cost for a childcare space in the province of Nova Scotia for an infant, an unsubsidized childcare space?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Education and Early Childhood to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Minister responsible now for early learning and early childhood, I think it's important to note that when the department was transferred from community services to the Department of Education, we recognized that there were certainly some areas within the childcare sector that needed to be addressed. One of those, as the member would know, is that has to do with the wages that we pay to our early childhood educators, as well as the spaces that we have available, the subsidized spaces. And there had not been a review of what we have, how we're delivering, where are the efficiencies, where can we better deliver. And so that review, certainly, Mr. Speaker, is something that we need to do before we continue down a path that may be the wrong one.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the cost of a monthly child care space for an infant in the province of Nova Scotia on average is $825 a month. And for a toddler, it's about $700 a month. And Mr. Speaker, I will table a chart that shows these costs in comparison to other provinces in Canada that comes from a national organization called Rethink Childcare. Mr. Speaker, in the province of Quebec, childcare for parents with infants on an annual basis costs on average less than, for Nova Scotian parents, $8,076 a year. Imagine, Mr. Speaker, having two kids and having to face these incredible costs if you are going to remain in the workforce. So my second question to the Premier is this. What is the government's plan to address the unaffordability of childcare in Nova Scotia to ensure parents can remain in the workforce?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I see the leader of the Democratic Party had the answer to her question. It's unfortunate the last, when she had 4 years in power, that she actually didn't do something about affordability. Speaker, I think the Minister of Education answered that question in the first response. This government is continuing to work, Mr. Speaker, with community organizations, ensuring that there will be child care spaces that are affordable across this province for Nova Scotia families.
Yeah. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much. Well, Mr. Speaker, after the mess that this crowd has made over 250 years, it really wasn't possible to fix everything in 4 years, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, let me say this to the Premier. The Ivany Report, Mr. Speaker, Now or Never, states that Nova Scotia has both a declining birth rate and a declining labour force participation rate. And hopefully, Mr. Speaker, we can all agree across party lines that none of us can afford to ignore an issue like affordable childcare that could help retain young families and improve labour market participation. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Why is the Premier and his government not taking any action to keep young families in Nova Scotia with a plan for affordable child care?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to say how proud I am of the work this government is doing to ensure that not only young families but all Nova Scotians get an opportunity to work in this province, continue to grow their families, raise their families in this province, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind this House that it was in 2006, it was the Democratic Party that voted against a national child care plan, Mr. Speaker, that would have dealt with this issue not only for this province but indeed the entire country.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The wait list for the province's early intensive behavioral intervention program is quickly growing. In the past year alone, referrals have been increased by 14%. We have seen little action on the issue by this government. In September, the minister announced a working group to examine the issue of access to EIBI and the ways they could fix that. However, in the 2012 progress report on the Autism Action Plan put forward by the former government, a committee with the exact same mandate was created 2 years ago. So my question to the minister is, why has the minister opted to create a duplicate advisory committee then address the problem head on?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to have the member ask that question, because we know that EIBI and its delivery to preschool children is now somewhat behind. In some years, it can be the result of the availability of therapists. We had a number last year who were out of their work for different reasons. However, we know that with the rate that Nova Scotia children are being diagnosed with autism, we certainly have to now to get our plan more robust for the years ahead.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And quite honestly, my question was, why are you recreating the wheel? The 2012 progress report indicates that the Department of Health and Wellness will be, quote, exploring ways to improve access and increase early identification and the appropriate and timely intervention. The September 2014 working group's mandate is to ensure that children diagnosed with autism get the treatment that they need at the right time. So if you can see the similarity between those two mandates, and they're nearly identical. Mr. Speaker. The government is well aware of the problems with access to EIBI and long wait lists, but they seem to be delaying unnecessary action. So when can the minister tell parents he will actually buckle down and address the issue once and for all?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I've met with parents in different parts of the province on this issue. We know that some areas have their children's program of VIBI, you know, pretty well 100% getting the help they need, the therapy before going to school. Right now, we have challenges here in the HRM area. In fact, I believe it was last year, 48 children entered the school system with autism. Some had to delay by a year before going to school. We know that this program, in order to be effective, and we want it to be that way, will need to be addressed in the coming year.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My final question as well would be to the Minister of Health. But I do want to correct something that the Minister of Education said a little earlier. She talked about children with suffering with autism, and of course they don't suffer with autism. That adds to the stigma of what autism actually is, and I hope that she thinks of that next time she's talking about autism. But to the Minister of Health, the Minister has publicly acknowledged that as a province we have a lot of work to do to support children on the autism spectrum. He has indicated that one of the driving problems with the wait list is a lack of trained therapists in certain areas of the province. If the Minister knows this, why has he not taken action to resolve the issue while he waits for the work of that expert panel?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And this is one of the areas that will need to be addressed, both in terms of training and also having the right number in the right place before children enter school. This is a program that can have tremendous positive impacts on future education. And I'm pleased, in fact, to have assembled some of the best people because we know also that EIBI is also undergoing some change in its delivery, and we will have an up-to-date, well-supported program in the next fiscal year.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, it's been over 30 years since the 1984 Royal Commission on Equality and Employment, led by Supreme Court of Canada Justice Rosalie Abella, who said in that report, which I'll table, that childcare is the ramp that provides equal access to the workplace for mothers. And in the years following, the province of Quebec introduced a childcare program, and employment among women in that province increased by nearly 10%. Mr. Speaker, I'll table a copy of that study as well. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Does the Premier agree with the statement that childcare is the ramp that provides equal access to the workplace for mothers?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there is no question that affordable childcare provides an opportunity for families to have equal access to employment and ensuring that their children are safe. Mr. Speaker, there's no question to that.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're starting to get somewhere. Mr. Speaker, in our gallery today, we have a mother young with her young child who lives in our province in Dartmouth. And she has two children, in fact. Her family's monthly bill for childcare would be $1,600 when she returns to work after maternity leave. And because childcare is so expensive, this mom, Susan LeBlanc, may need to leave the workplace for an extra year and says she just doesn't know how her family will deal with such a large monthly childcare bill. So I want to ask the Premier, Mr. Speaker, what advice does the Premier have to offer parents like Susan who would like to re-enter the workforce and advance their careers but cannot find affordable daycare in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank Suzanne for being here in the House today to be part of this serious issue that's raised not only, Mr. Speaker, for our problem, but indeed for our country. As I mentioned earlier, that there was a national child care plan that would not only address the issues for Suzanne and her family, but for families all across Nova Scotia and across the country. It is my hope that as we move forward, that we will continue, we will see a national government that will engage provinces on a way to ensure that we have an affordable child care network across the entire country, Mr. Speaker, and that will be a great day for this country.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm looking forward to $15 a day daycare nationally as well, Mr. Speaker. But in the meantime, Mr. Speaker, in 2006, the Premier who was in opposition at that time in this House said, I think we need to take a serious look at the issue and this program and expand it to a level so that every Nova Scotian child between 2 and 5 years old has access to quality daycare. And Mr. Speaker, I'll table the Hansard in which he urged his colleague, the member of his cabinet who was in the government of the day, to act immediately and said in the Hansard that there was no reason not to act immediately. So my question to the Premier, it's now 2014, 8 years later, why is there no plan to make childcare affordable so parents can remain in the labour force as active participants, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in 2006, Mr. Speaker, first of all, I want to acknowledge the member of our cabinet who was a tremendous job as a Minister of Education, Mr. Speaker. And again, I want to commend her for the great work that she's doing, again, on behalf of the people of the province of Nova Scotia and cabinet. But in 2006, Mr. Speaker, there was a willing partner at the national level who was prepared to fund a child care program across the entire country. There was a partner at the national level that engaged with provincial governments, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that we had a national program. And it was killed, Mr. Speaker. It was stopped, Mr. Speaker, because the New Democratic Party were chasing a few more seats.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Serious questions continue to be raised about the government's handling of the Novastar Ferry contract. $26 million has been spent in less than one season, and now taxpayers may even be on the hook to winter the Novastar Ferry down in Florida, Mr. Speaker. Now, former operators like Hank Rolls from the Scotia Prince days are questioning whether the current ferry operator is even living up to the terms of the contract that the government signed. I'd like to ask the Premier if he's satisfied that the Novastar operator is living up to the terms of the contract that his government signed, and if not, is he willing to reopen the contract to better protect taxpayers?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as the member would know, KPMG is now looking at that operation, Mr. Speaker. He would also know that the Minister of Economic and Rural Development made sure there were safeguards in there to protect Nova Scotians from outrageous salaries by the executive team, Mr. Speaker. One of the things that I want to tell the Honourable Member, I want to tell all Nova Scotians, is that we believe in that service, that we believe that Nova Scotia's ferry, the international link to this province that lands in Yarmouth, is an important asset that drives economic development and tourism across this province. We've seen a tremendous rise in American visitors in the month of August. But like all programs, government involved, we're continuing to review to make sure that we're getting what is the best deal for taxpayers.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've said before, and I hope all members agree, the question is not whether there should be a ferry in Yarmouth. It's whether the government signed a good deal for the people that rely on that ferry and for all Nova Scotia taxpayers. Mr. Speaker, that is the question. In fact, the matter is the Minister of Economic Development himself even questioned whether the Novastar operator is living up to their end of the deal, Mr. Speaker. And a spokesperson for his department recently said that if another company has a proposal that they want the government to look at, that they're prepared to look at it. And I just tabled that quote a moment ago. Mr. Speaker, of course we need a sustainable service for Yarmouth. We need to know whether the government signed a good deal or not. I'd like to ask the Premier if he can share with this House, is the government considering new proposals from other operators of the Yarmouth Ferry, as the spokesperson for the department said, or not?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, my first question, KPMG is now in reviewing this service, Mr. Speaker. They'll come back with recommendations to the province, but I want to tell all members of this House that this government engages all Nova Scotians who have an idea about how they can move economic development in this province. Will continue to do so. I want to ensure the member opposite, the leader of the Conservative Party, recognizes that this province is open for business.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm glad to hear that the province is open for business. It's not been evident from the government's actions to date in many other areas. But the question before us today is whether this government signed a good business deal with that operator that protects taxpayers or not. Because quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, we all want a Yarmouth Ferry. There has to be a good deal. And the people of Nova Scotia, all of them, legitimately are asking the government, did they sign a good deal that protects their interests or not? One of the reasons people are asking that question, not just us, Mr. Speaker, but lots of Nova Scotians who pay the bills every day, one of the reasons they're asking that question is that they don't see a plan beyond one season to the next. And they don't want to see, year after year, more and more checks written without an actual plan to have a ferry for the long run, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Premier, when will his government actually show us a long-term plan for a Yarmouth ferry that works for everybody?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it's become clear, Mr. Speaker, to all Nova Scotians that the previous government made a reckless decision, Mr. Speaker, when it came to cancelling that service. Mr. Speaker, over the last number of days, it's became clear to all Nova Scotians that the Conservative Party of Nova Scotia actually doesn't believe in the service, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and what has become...
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Speaker, I would... Mr. Speaker, I'd be more than happy to...
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Mr. Speaker... Mr. Speaker...
Order, please. Last order. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, the member from Argyll-Barrington, Mr. Speaker, is a bit nervous because he knows the very people in his constituency are embarrassed by the fact that their member is abandoning that service. Mr. Speaker, this government...
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, the member from Argyll-Barrington is going to have to decide, is he with the people who want the ferry, or is he going to stand beside his leader who wants to cancel it?
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's. Order, please. I'll have to respectfully ask the member for Argyll-Barrington to excuse himself for the remainder of question period. The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. And I would like to remind the Minister and also the Premier that the NDP actually added over 1,000 spaces to the daycare throughout Nova Scotia. We also did something that the daycare advocates and workers have asked for governments previously to do for a number of years, and that was to move early years over to education. Now, you don't do that with a magic wand, so we took the time to make sure that a foundation and structure was created in the Department of Education to do that. The other thing, Mr. Speaker, is the early years is about the future, not the past, where they keep on pointing fingers. We have to go forward. So, Mr. Speaker, perhaps... Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The average wage for early childhood educators, most of whom have a college or university education, is less than $13 per hour. In August of this year, the member for Glace Bay told the Cape Breton... I'm getting to the question, Mr. Speaker.
Next member, please. Who's up here? The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the Wheeler Expert Panel on Hydraulic Fracturing released each chapter of its report over time this past summer for public and industry feedback. The only chapter that was not released until the end, when the full report came out on August 28th, was Chapter 11 that actually detailed the recommendations of the Wheeler Panel. I'd like to ask the Premier, what day did his government receive the final Chapter 11 of the report that contained the actual recommendations?
The Honourable Premier.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Energy to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We received that chapter the same day that all Nova Scotians did. And of course, as the Honourable Member will know, that the recommendations in that chapter were announced publicly throughout that period over the over a preceding period of a few months by Dr. Wheeler at his town hall meetings across the province. So there was pretty well nothing in that chapter by the time it was released publicly or to us at the exact same time that had not previously been released publicly.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that clarification. It's very important to now know that the government received the final chapter with the actual recommendations at the same time as everybody else on October 28th, because the government has been saying that they had been considering those recommendations all along. Fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, that on that day, there were several revisions to the final report throughout the report and the first disclosure to the government and to all Nova Scotians of what the recommendations actually were. Mr. Speaker, this is a very important issue for the estimated 1,500 Nova Scotians that may get work in this new industry and whether the government is willing to try new things or ban them. The minister has been accused of making this decision, this important decision, after only 3 days of consideration. Now he's confirmed that he had the recommendations for only 3 days and that revisions were made on the final report. So I'd like to ask the Premier, why did his government take only the Labor Day weekend to consider something as important as whether to try new ways of creating jobs in our province or not?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Energy to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe with all the commotion in here earlier, the Honourable Member didn't hear the answer to my previous question. In fact, the fact that the panel would be recommending that hydraulic fracturing not proceed in Nova Scotia at this time was announced, I believe, in May by the panel. While that was in the final recommendations, it had been stated at almost every single public meeting that Dr. Wheeler had held across this province, and it had actually been very widely reported. And in fact, I met with the member for Argyle-Barrington, and we talked about that very issue at a meeting.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just in the interest of time, I'll direct this question to the Minister of Energy directly. Mr. Speaker, we could debate for a long time why or if the government only took the Labor Day weekend to make a decision of this size, but whether they're willing to try new ways to create jobs or not. But why don't we just turn to the Wheeler Report panelists themselves and ask them that question, Mr. Speaker. Many of them have already spoken out in print and in media interviews, saying that they think the government has not followed the recommendations of the Wheeler Report and only took a few short days to say no. So I'd like to ask the minister, has he invited members of the Wheeler panel to come together with him and sort out whether he's right or they're right?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
You know, Mr. Speaker, the members of the panel were released by Dr. Wheeler on that day. I have spoken with Dr. Wheeler a couple of times in that intervening time, who was the chair of the panel. It was indicated to us that he feels that it did follow the panel's recommendation. Two of the panelists have actually stated publicly now that they feel that this more than followed their recommendations. And I understand there are others that say they haven't, but all panelists, every single panelist, signed on to the recommendation that said that hydraulic fracturing should not proceed in this province at this time and that the social license does not exist at this time. Mr. Speaker, we are following that recommendation and we are doing the science and the regulatory updates and everything else that's required before hydraulic fracturing should proceed, if ever, and before the social license is addressed. Mr. Speaker, the member should well know that, in fact, in the areas of this province where there are shale deposits, that those municipalities, many of them, have in fact passed prohibitions on it, and the Supreme Court has recently upheld their ability to do so.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. The average wage for early childhood educators, most of whom have a college or university education, is less than $13 per hour. In August of this year, the member for Glace Bay told the Cape Breton Post that he supports higher wages for early childhood educators. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. He also indicated that he had spoken with the minister on numerous occasions about the need to increase wages for child care workers and that the soon-to-be-released education review may lead to some action. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister, which section of the education review addresses the wages of early childhood educators?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would remind the member opposite that the Education Review Panel will be presented to me on October 30th. I have chosen not to take it, not to meddle with it, but to accept it.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you for the answer. Mr. Speaker, perhaps the member for Glace Bay has seen more of the review than the minister. In another article this summer, the member for Glace Bay told the Chronicle Herald that, and I quote, when you look at levels that are near minimum wage, when you look at the fact that we are the lowest in the country, that's what we're going to look at. And this review endeavor will give us some of those answers. I'll table that article as well, Mr. Speaker. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the minister, will she please share with us what answers are contained in the education review that relate to wage increases for early childhood educators?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I answered that question the first time. However, I will go on to say that when the early childhood development component from community services was transferred to education, that government, that caucus, had acknowledged that Nova Scotia was 10 out of 10 with respect to wages. They lived with that for 4 years. They're expecting it to be changed. It will be, but not in 10 months.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I will remind the member that, in fact, there was a plan with regard to wages, and we started that process. So, Mr. Speaker, we are joined in the gallery today by representatives of the Nova Scotia Association of Early Childhood Education, and I think they will be interested to hear that when in opposition, the now Premier criticized the Conservative government of the day for not putting the proper amount of resources into pay for people who work in daycare facilities, as they are early year educators. And Mr. Speaker, I will table that. So, Mr. Speaker, my Final question through you to the minister. What does she consider to be the proper amount of resources needed to improve the wages of early childhood educators?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, the member referenced me in her question. I want to tell all members of this House, and I want to tell especially the members in the gallery, that in 2006, when they're bringing those comments out, Mr. Speaker, the national government of the day was building a national child care program, Mr. Speaker, that would have set this country on a path, Mr. Speaker, that would have recognized, Mr. Speaker, that would have recognized the potential in young Canadians as well as recognized the work that is being done by people who are looking after our children, Mr. Speaker, and providing them with quality child care. Our government, Mr. Speaker, will continue to work with people providing child care across this province so that we make sure we address the problems you left undone.
I'll just remind the Honourable Premier not to refer to members opposite directly. The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Protection and Privacy Act. Last week, the Minister said he was not aware of any vacant FOIPOP administrator positions. Department of Energy's FOIPOP administrator had left his position about a month ago. The alternative person listed in the department to deal with FOIPOP requests is the Director of Regulatory and Strategic Policy. And Mr. Speaker, I can expect that person is fully busy dealing with onshore gas, natural gas issues. My question for the Minister, what happens in instances like these where a FOIPOP administrator leaves and the alternative person is at maximum capacity working on issues relating to their primary capacity?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, as I have over 600 employees in my departments alone, I'm not going to keep tabs on either department. Perhaps the Minister of Energy would like to comment on an employee who is in his department. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The FOIPOP position was a 0.3 FTE. I doubt in any department it's actually a full FTE, and it's actually being absorbed by multiple people in the department at the moment, led by the contact, who would be the director that you mentioned.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess the challenge becomes when there's people who are filling a role temporarily, it leads to delays in processing of requests. Now, this position has a great deal of importance. It has a steep learning curve, making it difficult for temporary people to fill in. And apparently, and what we have heard is in the case of at Energy, they've actually hired a consultant to fill this void for the time being. So my question again to the Minister responsible for the Act, how often does the government hire temporary workers to fill vacant FOIPOP administrator positions?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act or the Minister of Energy?
Mr. Speaker, as this is in the Department of Energy, I'll pass the question on to the Minister of Energy.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member is exactly correct that we have hired a temporary consultant to deal with that to ensure that a backlog does not exist. I might also add, as the members of his caucus will know, In the three departments that I'm responsible for, one of the things that we do is we try and deal with as many requests just by routine disclosure of information if people call and ask. And so we try and limit the number of times we require people to go through FOIPOP in any case. But we're doing that to ensure that the problem the Honourable Member is talking about doesn't happen.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for the answer. There's no question, I think, with these kinds of requests, there's a bit of back and forth, and that's a good thing, because if it helps to focus in on the information requested, that saves everybody time and fees, of course, Mr. Speaker. My final question, and since it seems to be going to the Minister of Energy, why not let the Minister of Energy answer this one? We know that it does take 2 to 3 months, probably closer to 3 months, for a hire to be made in government, according to the Public Service Commissioner. Can the Minister of Energy tell us when a new administrator at Energy will be hired to fill this position that is currently being handled by the person who has been contracted on a temporary basis?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're going through the process at the moment. That person is actually our Aboriginal Affairs Coordinator as well and fills a number of roles. So we're going through that process at the moment, and we're working with the Minister of the Public Service Commission to deal with that. So I hate to refer it back, but if you want additional information, I'm sure he would be happy to talk about the hiring process in the civil service.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. Nova Scotians are worried about the financial situation of the province. The province has the highest debt it has ever seen and is set to table deficit after deficit. Mr. Speaker, federal transfer payments to this province totaled over $3 billion in the last year. So my question today is this government content to rely on the rest of Canada to fund its spending and increasing debt?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I always appreciate the opportunity to talk about the serious financial situation that we are in this province. Mr. Speaker, we have had a reliance on federal income over the years. In fact, it's less than it's been in years gone by, but it's still a very, very significant part of our budget. And, Mr. Speaker, we are doing everything we can to work on the economy, to work with the opposition, to work with labour unions, to try and get everybody working together to make Nova Scotia as successful as it can possibly be.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for her response. It would be wonderful if the government would listen to the opposition on some of the things, but it's interesting that they feel they are. But, Mr. Speaker, the $3 billion in transfer payments from the federal government accounts for about a third of the provincial's total budget, province's total budget. This ratio is one of the highest in the country. And in spite of these realities, this government has shown little leadership when it comes to paying off the debt, supporting small businesses, or balancing the budget. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, Nova Scotians are tired of being a have-not province. What is the government doing to transform Nova Scotia from a have-not to a have province?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And there wouldn't be time to go over everything that we are doing because there's so much going on in this province. Thank you. And, Mr. Speaker, in our relations with the federal government, we don't consider ourselves a have-not province. We go into that to be a contributor. One thing I would like to mention to the member opposite in answer to his question is that royalty revenues are up significantly this year, as are exports.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And despite the clapping and laughter, Nova Scotians are struggling. And the government would do wise to listen to Nova Scotia, because the fact is that Nova Scotia is so reliant on federal transfers and it's not being ignored by the rest of Canada. They are watching, eager to see what we will do to pull ourselves up. Mr. Speaker, this government is one that is financed largely by the rest of Canada, and yet it turns down new sources of revenue such as shale gas. So my question to the minister is, would the minister admit that we owe it to Nova Scotians and the rest of Canada to be more open to new ways of creating revenue, such as shale gas development?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think a big part of the question that the Minister is asking is around the relationship with the federal government and our reliance on some of those funds. And I think that it's very important to note that on the health transfers alone, we have been treated very unfairly by the federal government in terms of our aging population and the pressures that we feel in the healthcare sector. That needs to be recognized as we go forward. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. Mr. Speaker, literacy is a basic foundation for successful futures. Poor literacy limits opportunities and leads to poverty. In today's information age, poor literacy is crippling. A Conference Board of Canada report released in 2012 showed more than 40% of adults in Nova Scotia had inadequate literacy skills, and the board gave Nova Scotia a D grade. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. My question for the minister, the eradication of poverty day was late last week in Nova Scotia. Will the minister provide a plan to substantially reduce inadequate literacy in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very proud to stand and say that our government has identified literacy as a priority, and to that end, we have put additional dollars into the literacy strategy because we recognize that students need to have the reading skills perfected really at the end of grade three so they can be successful as they move on to upper elementary, junior, senior high school. And we recognize that the scores are not good enough. And Mr. Speaker, I would say to you that when we saw the grade three results in the spring, we recognized that there were a number of students who had not scored well, and we made them our priority, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Conference Board of Canada report also indicated that nearly 60% of Nova Scotia adults have inadequate numeracy skills and gave the province another D grade. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. In today's employment world, numerous jobs, including those of carpenters and a wider range of other employment skills, require solid numeracy skills. My question to the Minister: does the minister see a date in time when Nova Scotians will not be facing handicaps such as lacking numeracy skills in finding employment?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite, who is a teacher and would understand the importance of both math and literacy skills. And I'm pleased to say that when we looked at both of those, we developed a strategy. We invested millions of dollars in both math and literacy skills strategies to ensure that we can give those students the skill set that they need as they move on through high school and off into the work world. Mr. Speaker, no one can predict when or how, but we must recognize that it is an issue. We will invest in that, and we will make sure that we improve those skills, those scores.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Conference Board of Canada report said that approximately 55% of adults have inadequate problem-solving skills. The board clearly indicates that inadequate problem-solving skills is one of 11 barriers to employment. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians must improve literacy and numeracy skills needed to increase the finding of meaningful employment. Nova Scotia's unemployment rate is already too high and certainly has not improved in the last year. What is the plan to prevent these people from falling through the cracks?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's important to note that, as we've stated here, we have an education panel that will be presenting their report on October the 30th. We recognize that it will look at what Nova Scotians are saying about our education system, what we need to improve on, where we need to invest, and I anticipate that there will be something in that report which does help us focus on those two priorities of both literacy and math skills in this province.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Yesterday in the United States, the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, released its guidelines for Ebola protection, which requires all healthcare workers in contact with the disease be provided with a protective garment, hoods, face shields, double gloves, face masks, and respirators that cover every square inch of the body. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. In Canada, however, the lone exception of Ontario has a much lower level of protection that's being offered for their healthcare workers, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the Canadian Federation of Nurses says that the level of protection being offered in Nova Scotia and other Canadian provinces is unacceptable and does not meet the standard to protect healthcare workers, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that. So I'd like to ask the Minister. So my question to the Minister of Health, why is the province not providing the same minimum level of protection against Ebola as Ontario and the United States?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I was hoping the member opposite would have had that question answered in the briefing that he would have received earlier today. But I want to ensure the member and all Nova Scotians know that, in fact, we have in this province ordered the latest protective garments, impenetrable garments, for one major unit here at the QE2, and we hope they will be arriving shortly.
Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the briefing was yesterday. I did ask the question. That's why I'm asking again. because it wasn't clear, and it is not clear, Mr. Speaker, that all healthcare workers that potentially could have be exposed will have access to the equipment that I think they should have. As I mentioned before, Ontario has taken steps above and beyond what Health Canada is recommending to protect its healthcare workers and the public, Mr. Speaker. The Ontario plan outlines that two nurses at all times provide care to any patients confirmed as having Ebola, and that those nurses will not be allowed to care for any other patients. Qualified management staff who have been appropriately trained must also supervise the safety of healthcare workers at all times, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister of Health, if there is a confirmed case of Ebola in Nova Scotia, will healthcare workers be recruited solely for Ebola care, and how will those healthcare workers be selected?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and pleased to say that that Nova Scotia was the second province, second part of the country to have the crisis team arrive here and go through the team that, in fact, would be responding to a suspected case of Ebola. And I feel that our nurses, our physicians, all clinicians who would deal with a suspected case will, in fact, now continue that training, as well as protocols are being extended across the province to every district, so that we have a very clear plan as to what would take place. In fact, if there was a suspicious case in Sydney or Yarmouth, they would, in fact, the care would go to them first and then brought to a unit here at the QE2.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the key to protecting healthcare workers against infectious diseases like Ebola is not only due to equipment, Mr. Speaker, but also it's important to have the training. It's why the United States, the CDC, has ordered that healthcare workers practice repeatedly and demonstrate proficiency in donning and doffing the gear before being allowed near a patient with Ebola, Mr. Speaker. So I'm wondering if the minister, through you to the minister, I wonder if the minister could indicate currently in Nova Scotia if or how many times healthcare workers have been required to practice putting on, donning and doffing the protective equipment that is going to be provided to healthcare workers.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's an important question the member asked, because really it has an application to any infectious disease that could come into our healthcare system. We learn much from SARS and from H1N1, but this Ebola does require the best equipment, the best protective equipment, but also, as he has identified, training. And this is why the crisis team came to our province yesterday to make sure, in fact, that we have a standard that will be practiced right across the country, and the whole goal is that continuous practice will take place, and we, in fact, would be well prepared if there's even a suspected case.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Labour productivity is a telling indicator of how competitive an economy is. In 2013, Nova Scotia had the lowest labour productivity in Canada, about half that of Alberta, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. On a positive note, between 1997 and 2010, business sector labour productivity grew faster than the national average. A report prepared for the Department of Labour and Advanced Education in 2012 showed that mining and oil and gas extraction was one of the main contributors to this growth. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. My question for the Minister, would declining investment from the oil and gas industry negatively impact Nova Scotia's already lagging labour productivity?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to thank the member for the question, and I would like to inform him that, in fact, the Minister of Energy has indicated to me that, in fact, it has gone up.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, labour productivity is a key component of economic growth. and social development. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. In this province, the labor force itself is not an obstacle for productivity. We have a well-educated and capable workforce. Instead, it is the lack of investment in research and development for emerging industries that has held Nova Scotia back. My question for the Minister, was she consulted by the Department of Energy prior to his decision to ban the development of shale gas industry in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Honourable Member for the question. No.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as the Minister knows, innovation and investment in the energy sector is important for improving labour productivity and making the provincial economy more competitive. My question for the Minister, will the Minister work with the Department of Energy in the future to ensure that its decisions do not harm Nova Scotia's long-term competitiveness? Yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question. We are always happy to work with the Department of Energy. We have terrific workers here in Nova Scotia. We have many programs that help them with their productivity, and so we're always happy to work with our other departmental partners. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, the Bill 6 references five occasions in one short page of high-volume hydraulic fracturing. I wonder, my question, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister is, does the bill by omission permit medium and low-volume hydraulic fracturing?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the member well knows from reading the bill, and I know that traditionally we don't discuss directly the details of bills in question period before the House, but I'm happy to tell the Minister that the definition, as we committed to publicly, is being done through a stakeholder process and a public process, and even the draft recommendation and definition will be published for 30 days as a standard with regulations. Mr. Speaker, that is the standard process with regulations, and I look forward to the input of that member in those regulations.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is this. How can you bring a bill in without having definitions?
Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, it isn't terribly complicated, Mr. Speaker. High-volume hydraulic fracturing is extremely well understood in the energy industry. In fact, there are numerous jurisdictions that, in fact, use that. And, in fact, as I said publicly at the beginning, the definitions are really around things
order,
like...
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I make an introduction, please?
Permission granted.
Thank you. I'd like to take this opportunity, Mr. Speaker, to introduce a number of very dedicated child care educators in the province of Nova Scotia, and they're from the Nova Scotia Early Childhood Educators. And if they can stand as I mention their names, Michelle Lonis, Carrie Smith, Catherine Couture, and Kelly Goulden. And if everyone would please provide them with a warm welcome.
The Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I would move that you leave the chair and the committee